Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I hope you all had a great bank holiday weekend and are looking forward to some nice summer vibes ahead. Today's podcast is with Rohil Ahmad, and Rohil is a co-founder of Forsyth Barnes, along with Scott, who I interviewed, got back in the pandemic. Then Scott told me all the lofty dreams and plans they had for the company, and I wondered, would they be actually able to pull this off? Lo and behold, here we are. They've got international offices. They have successfully scaled. They are one of the fastest growing recruitment companies in the world, and they have a steely belief in their mission, and I wouldn't bet against them. So we had an open chat just about his journey and how they do things maybe a little bit differently, and how he views the industry and his thought process. We share something similar in that we both like to look for things outside the recruitment industry and then see if they can be applied to our space. And he's done that to great success. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. Fantastic company and an amazing success story. And I love success stories. There's too much doom and gloom out there. So we should celebrate the winners, and especially the people who stand up and say, I'm going to do this. And that's what they did. And as ever, this podcast is sponsored by Luxo and Sourcewell, two products that are keeping us in a very healthy state in our business. And I'm delighted to be partnered with them. All right, guys, hope you enjoy it. More episodes coming soon.
Hi, Dan Alexander here, and this episode is brought to you by Recwired, the all-in-one go-to platform for serious recruitment professionals, owners, and founders who are looking to grow their businesses. Now, we'll actually be launching the new online platform very soon, and if you'd like to be one of the first people to get access to our state-of-the-art learning platform and vault of online resources, then get in touch with us through the link in the description of this episode.
All right, welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I am joined today by Rohil Ahmad, co-founder of Forsyth Barnes. It's been a long time since I've had you guys on the podcast.
Yeah,
I did it. I did one with Scott in lockdown.
I think it was. It was in his home office, and you're asking the Messi Ronaldo debate. He had that in his background.
I remember thinking, God, you guys had a great plan, and you were off to a good start. And he was unbelievably confident about it. And it's worked out. It's working well
so far. Yeah, maybe some of that confidence turned to arrogance a bit, but I don't know. It's working so far for what we do.
Give us a snapshot of where you're at right now.
So I can't exactly remember what he had said or where we were on the cusp of last time, but London, Nottingham in the UK, New York is established now in the US, would have been out there in 2020, but for obvious reasons. Mm. So we had about five relocators go from the UK market into the US, and they're all permanently out in New York now, living in and around Manhattan. Loving life out there, would be out there with them. But personal circumstances just a little bit different, and yeah, going really, really well. Next things on the cards for us are, we're looking at the West Coast, whether we do somewhere like in LA. So how quickly can we get ready and be ready for that? And then we took a recent trip about a week or two ago to Dubai as an incentive.
And
on that, there's about five or six hands have shot up straight away when I've just jokingly said in the taxi, oh, what if we set up something here? And yeah, five or six hands are shot up straight away.
I could fill that office for you. We're struggling to persuade people to move to America right now, but Dubai?
I'd love to get into why that is in some offline, but
I'm happy to talk about it online. Before COVID, everybody wanted to move to America, And after COVID, all the founders want to set up, but the recruiters don't want to move. And we're getting some, but I think some of it has to do with remote work and more people doing the US market from the UK. And then the ease of Australia and getting the visa and all of that might be it, but could also be political reasons. You know, I think the shit show of CNN versus Fox News polluted all the airwaves for everybody. Like, so you just kind of go, oh, I kind of dislike all of these people. So it's unfortunate. And I'm hoping that that's going to change. Do you remember, I don't know, what age are you now?
35.
Okay, so you're around my age, right? When we were growing up, America was the great hope, right? Like, anybody who moved there, it was like, wow, how did you manage that? Like, you always had a relative that made it in America, and it was amazing. And I don't know, it's lost its luster for some people, but I would say it's going to come back. I bet, how are the people who've moved there from your company? Are they happy they went?
They're loving it, yeah. I don't think any of them have regretted the decision. I don't know, for me, it's still got that magic. The US, I love being out there. Look, don't get me wrong, with the amount that we're going back and forwards, I hate the flying. And I'm not exactly, I'll sit there in my seat for 7 hours and invariably not get up unless I'm absolutely desperate to. But I love being out there. I love the energy of New York. Then when we're going over to LA, obviously you've got the benefits of climate and everything out there as well. For me, it's got so much of that magic still. I just think that Dubai is just different, and the market opportunities will be different as we're going through our research now. But we're putting that into the roadmap now of the business. So fingers crossed, we do this again in another couple of years or so. We're talking about a West Coast office, a Dubai office, and then talking about which other ones we're opening from there as well.
Like, did you think you'd end up at this point where you had like 80 people and you're flying around the world and you're making those things happen? Or is...
Yes, I wince a little bit because I don't want that to come across like an arrogant. Yes. But yes. Scott and I, when we set this place up, we always had the mindset that we're going to open a global business. We are highly ambitious. We're very similar in a lot of ways. We're highly ambitious. We believe and back ourselves that we can see a plan out and actually land the numbers and perform on it as well. And we are at the moment. So yeah, like, we always knew we were going to go down this route. It was just as a case of, if anything, we're frustrated that we're not further on rather than where we are.
Because you guys worked for, who did you guys come from? You worked for some other business before, if I remember.
Back in the day, Timothy James, which is back in the day, 2010 sort of time. Worked for those guys for a few years. And then I did a short stint at Lawrence Harvey, 6 months at Lawrence Harvey. Enjoyed my time there, was actually still love Tom and the business and everything as well. Got a lot of respect for those guys. But then Scott had gone somewhere else, a place called MM, and I was asked to go set up contract for those guys, which is what I did.
And how did you know that you would get like a global business? Was it working for Lawrence Harvey that you got, like, you saw?
No, they weren't at that time. They weren't global. They were still one office at that time when I was there. And I had a good relationship with Tom, but I didn't have too much business exposure for him to necessarily influence me in that way. Mm. It was our ambition to. And it's just self-belief. And again, call it self-arrogance in the nicest kind of way. We just backed ourselves and just thought we'd go on that path. So it was how quick we could do it. Had some influence along the way from people. So when was it? About 2021, I think it was, is where I brought Tom Glanfield in as an advisor to the business. And he sat with us for about a year or so. And so his like positive advice and his learns that he had from LH and everything, I think we benefited from. But it was always our ambition to do so. So here we are.
And you guys did it without getting funding, isn't that right?
Completely, yeah. Completely organic, or bootstrapped, as we say in the US market.
And has that been the case throughout?
Yeah, never taken a penny from anyone. Haven't needed to. I put the majority of that at Scott's door. He's got an amazing head for numbers. I've bet clients like retainers on it and stuff before. If his mental arithmetic works out, Then they're going to pay us X percentage. If he's wrong, we'll give you a discounted rate on it. And he's come through every single time. But the, I guess the prudent kind of controls and measures he put in place from day one made sure that financially we've always been very, very sound. We made a little go a long way, especially at the beginning. We still do now. Don't think we've lost that. But at the very beginning, we made a little go a long way.
It's a remarkable story. So you're at 80.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
What's the secret?
A lot of hard work, but I think more than anything is that ambition and drive, to be honest. So we never just sat there. How long we're in our what, eighth year now, and I hand on heart can't think of a single time that Scott and I sat there, patted each other on the back and said, we're doing a great job, or we've made it, or anything like that. So I literally just booked my flights to the US this morning. Still flying the economy because in my head, A, the price is ridiculous, right? When you're looking at a business ticket for about $8,000-$9,000 a ticket, in my head, I'm looking at it thinking, that's two or three people I could probably hire in the business. Yeah. And if we're both going out every month, that's people we could have in the business. So we had a lot of personal sacrifice, still continue to do so. Our ambition, the drive behind it, the ambition that we've been able to put across the business. And I'd also say we're fortunate with the people that we've got around us as well. They share that similar ambition. So no one in this business wants to stay still. I think between me and him, even if he messaged me a well done now, I still find it a little bit weird.
All right. So the last time I had Scott on, we discussed the different service lines that he was putting into the business.
Yeah.
Did they all come to fruition? Did they pivot? Did they change? What does it look like now in terms of the productization of the business?
Yeah, so we're still going through part of that journey. Have they come to fruition? Yes. So we've got, we do very well on the retained end of the marketplace anyway, especially at the senior exec area where we are. We've successfully delivered a number of multi-hire projects as well, delivered some of the bigger stuff, the kind of for, I don't know, generic terms, talent as a service type stuff as well. Mm. I think now the next level of that is the scalability of it as well. So what I mean by that is the experience that the clients are receiving, the experience that the candidates are receiving. At the moment, what that's been has still been what I would call good and added value, but still not innovative enough. What I'm looking for is for every client that goes through one of our product sets to look at it and say, irrespective of what the end result was, that was the best run process we've ever had, the best service we've ever had. Same thing on the candidate side, whether they get the job or not, to say that's the slickest, best, most modern environment and process I've ever been through. And if I had to kind of put it one way, our industry is known for what? You're heavily reliant on our people, right? And it's almost that age-old thing of, well, this person's now gone and left. They've gone to a competitor, or they've set up for themselves. That relationship then dies down. How often do we hear that story in our industry?
Yeah, all the time.
This client dies down, blah, 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 blah. It was hinged on that one individual. So I guess my ambition is now, and our ambition as a business now, is we want to make sure that we're productizing our business where our clients aren't trading with us and buying from us because of the relationship they have with the individual, but based on the strength of the service. In a similar way now, you probably use an Uber or an app for taxis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, you used to use the company that you had the best relationship with the most reliable, maybe you knew like a personal friend there or something like that. But that productized the whole industry. And now you trade with them because of the ease and so on as well. It's not, you don't know who the driver is. You don't know if there's a company behind it, etc. You're doing it because of the ease of access. So it's a similar thing with us now of people are always going to be central to our business, but actually want our clients buying from us because of our products, not because they've got a relationship with this person, that person, etc. Mm-hmm. So we're on that pathway right now.
I had Toby Babb on the podcast a little while ago, and I enjoy interviewing him because he isn't like stuck to one way. And if he's had to change or say he was wrong the last time he came on, he's always pretty open. And he said, one of the big corporate changes they've made now is there's certain people in the business, him and James and Nadia, who've been their shareholders, they've been there from day one. They're making them in charge of the major accounts and having ownership of that. So almost like as you move through the ranks, traditionally, if you're at Walters or Page, you build teams and you move further away from the client. Now he's doing the opposite way. What's your thoughts on how that will work in terms of those relationships, given that you said you don't want to lose a relationship when somebody leaves?
I think, look, in this current day and age, I don't think that it can't work. But I still think, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to people who have been in the industry and have gone and achieved a hell of a lot more than we have and I have personally so far. So there's no disrespect to them at all. I still think it's just another version of what we've seen for the last two or three decades. Mm-hmm. I still think it is a very recruitment insular type thinking. Like one of the things that I challenge this business with almost daily, and I'm thinking about daily, is actually rather than looking at what the rest of the rec industry is doing, has done for the last two, three decades, is what are the tech businesses doing? Mm-hmm. I'm more influenced by the global scale businesses in the tech world than I am in our industry. And what influence can we take from them? I look at WeWork and what they did and how they built that up. And yes, you've got all the crap of it was valued at 47 billion and now it's seven and the accounting issues, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I do think there's a big part that people miss out of that is what did he manage to create in a very short space of time, which changed the industry? IWG, Regus had to respond and they released Spaces. And now if you look at the office sectors and what offices look like, it's completely changed off the back of what they did. So it's, how do they drive innovation in their sectors rather than thinking, we'll just go and rinse and repeat what these guys are doing or just do a slightly better version of what those guys are doing, etc. That's the question I ask myself more.
What's the answer you've given yourself?
That there's a better way of doing things. And I think that? Our industry... I think our industry is, as much as I love it, but part of the issues with it is there's such low barriers to entry and most businesses started up, such as ourselves, as Scott and I have done, by salespeople as a background in sales, that it has been a bit of a rinse and repeat. You look at the Knotts market, I'm sat in Nottingham right now, you look at the Knotts market, so much of the Knotts market has spawned from your McElDowies who were here sort of 30 odd years ago and things like that. Not much has changed. It's one of the reasons that we came along and pissed a few people off. Because we were a London business that came to the Knotts market.
Yeah.
And it ruffled a few feathers and it frustrated a few. And for the good first few years, all we heard from people that we were interviewing was, too good to be true. The bubble's going to burst. You're too good to be true. I don't know how you're paying this much out. I don't know how you're working on these roles. It doesn't happen in this market. Oh, you're doing proper contract where most people do temps, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not, I think we said, why have we worked so far? It's that thing of, from the very beginning, Scott and I haven't just been happy to do things because that's the way it's done or that's how we were told it's done. We've always challenged ourselves and tried to get external influence from clients, for instance, CEO of a global software business. Cool. How are you guys going about scaling your business? How have you done that? How have you acquired? Like, what influence can we take from businesses like that to grow us?
But can you give me an example of what you got out of that? Like what tangible thing did you take from another industry, put it into your business that makes it not traditional recruitment?
Yeah, so for instance, at the moment, we are probably about 85% of the way of building our own SaaS platform. It's all, we've got our own IP. It's been built from the ground up internally. It's a subscription platform on it. But it's not at this stage anyway, for what we're using it for, it's not a recruitment platform. So it's not going to replace anyone in FB. We're not going to use it to trade with clients in that particular way. It's much more a growth and enablement platform. So it's there for those growth and scale businesses that we enjoy doing the most work with. We get the most satisfaction working with those clients.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not a million miles off completing it. But now we're on the hunt for basically a co-founder to come into the business with a tech background who's been in this world previously. That's the kind of missing link for it now to be able to take it to the next level. We've not even built it yet, and we've got clients interested in it as well. So we've got one wealth management.
And is it going to be like an employer branding type space, or is there?
No, it's a growth platform for scale businesses aimed at the non-exec and advisor type market. But again, if you're taking some of the AI from things like, if you can imagine like a Netflix type, you've watched this, so you might be interested in this show. What we want to build into it is some of the AI, where it's you've engaged with these type of people. So based on where your business is at, the information we hold on your business, based on your previous engagement, we think that as part of your next part of your journey, you're going to enjoy speaking to this person, or it would be useful for you to speak to this person, or you're going to need advice in 6 months' time from this type of individual. That's good. What we're trying to build right now.
So an advisory platform that I suppose it gets you closer to the sun.
Yeah. So there are benefits to what we call core FB right now as well, but we see a huge potential for the platform itself, and so do others. We've already in talks with a wealth management firm who are talking about picking it up as a white label product. This is pre-completion of build.
Yeah.
So these guys are talking about introducing it to something like about 47 of their clients, but they think they could introduce it to 272.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a good opportunity for us. And then there's the questions of, do we spin it out? Do we do a cap raise for that? We haven't needed to do it for FB, but do we do a cap raise for that? Do we then go and launch it out of somewhere like a Silicon Valley, et cetera, et cetera?
Okay, exciting, hey? What do you do in the business and what does Scott do?
Whatever we need to. No, our roles, we split our roles a couple of years ago. So I guess the easy way to say it is Scott looks after everything from ops, finance, IT, internal, et cetera, reporting to him. And then the other side is mine, basically. So the sales guys and so on is mine. And then we're together pretty often.
Are you the ideas guy?
He's got good ideas too.
Who's the one who comes with most of the stuff and the other person says, challenges them and makes them jump through the hoops?
If I looked at our strengths, and this is the beauty of FB now, because at the beginning, we used to double up on a lot. And so we'd repeat a lot and it was double the efforts and so on as well. I think our strengths are coming to the fore individually now. I think I'm better at the ideas. He's better at the implementation of them than I am. So I need his help and support. Where we're trying to do something, I wouldn't get it done on my own. I know that's one of my weaknesses, but I'm more comfortable about that now than I probably was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I probably tried too hard to mask that, whereas I'm more, yeah, cool. I'm not as good as implementation. He is, so let's harness our individual skills and strengths.
I have a similar thing with my wife. It's she's my business partner. She gets shit done, and she manages my madness. But sometimes that back and forth creates cool stuff. It's interesting, the non-executive thing. I'd like to do that with Recwired. We obviously we've hundreds of companies in there, and we've loads of plans for it, and we've got a brilliant team now, and I've got the non-executive network as well. The non-executive
license you the platform.
What was that?
We can license you the platform once it's complete.
Yeah, sure. I mean, or we could just build our own. I think that with AI, we have an AI guy in house now, and nice. he can just build stuff straight away. And they like, see, if you had to come with this idea 5 years ago, I think I'd be like, that's going to cost too much money. But now the cost of building stuff is so, so low. With AI coming in, what do you see the future of our industry? How do you see the job of the recruiter changing over the next 5-10 years?
So I think as an industry, I think those who are probably transacting at the more lower entry level are going to find it tough as that AI gets better, where for the more, you know, the gig economy type areas of our sector, I think they platforms will take over there. I think where we operate at our level, I'm not as worried that it's the death of the recruiter or anything like that. I would be interested to see how anyone thinks AI would tackle the thing of when you're dealing with senior execs, what's their personality like? What's their ambition? What's their gravitas? Can they hold a room? That type of thing of whether AI is truly going to be able to fulfill an answer there. Mm. So don't worry about that bit per se. For the individual recruiter.
But it's the road to getting to that conversation.
Yeah, I think I'm a big believer in, and again, you hear this a lot in our industry, of things were stronger back then, things were different back then, et cetera, et cetera. We hear that all the time. And look, we're still guilty of thinking the same way. But one of the things I challenge our guys in turn is, great, what are you going to do? You're going to get in a time machine and go back then. Stop harking about what was better back then.
Yeah.
Let's look at the principles of what would still apply and work now. We've got to apply it to the modern day individual who's in our sector now. When I started out, did we care much about anything other than earnings? Did I have a benefits package? Did I even have a pension as part of my benefits? I don't think I did. And if I did, I clearly don't remember anything about it. I didn't care about anything other than what my earnings were. And honestly, I didn't actually care much about that because for me, my motivations were different. Now, there's a greater sense and feeling towards what's the mission? What's the corporate social responsibility? How are we giving back? What's my development, et cetera, as well, right? So I think from a tools perspective and the development of a recruiter in our industry, I think there are loads of benefits to be had of it is now easier than it ever has been to get access to people, to get people's data, to get an understanding of people, businesses, and so on and so forth. I think the challenge and those that will get stronger over time is that people interaction and engagement lessens off. You lose that ability to do an elevator pitch, to engage someone in the first 30, 60 seconds of a conversation, of a call. And there's that over-reliance on tech. I think those that can hold on to those good principles of what it used to be like, whilst harnessing the benefits of tech and with the way tech's going to continue to grow, will be the best out there in the marketplace. I think you'll get a lot of average people who will just rely on the tech piece to transact. And that's where the struggle will come as an industry.
Yeah. We're at that middle point in it, I think, where everybody's getting obsessed with it. So a lot of their time has been spent on it. Whereas if you had have started your career in 12, whatever years ago, you were forced to be on the phone. You did learn those series of things to do on a daily basis. So we could get to a point where the business can handle all of the tech stuff and just fill the diaries of the recruiter.
Yeah, I think it's also difficult for businesses in some respect. There's now so much out there. What did they used to be out there back in the day? I'm trying to look back and think, right, you had your CRM. You had things like a Broadbean if the business you're in could afford it. It wasn't cheap. What else really was there? LinkedIn. Cool. There wasn't at the beginning. I don't think there was LinkedIn Recruiter and Sales Navigator and all of that sort of stuff. When I first started out, we didn't have the headset piece. It was physical phones and stuff, right? So I look back, I think now, and I think there's so much technology for prospective owners to bring in. I think the challenge can be you can't bring it all in. And at some point, it's well, that could add value and this could add value. Yeah, but you've got to actually have an idea and a proposition of what your business is going to be about. You can't bring every single bit of tech in because then there's too much for the consultants and the recruiters to actually use. And they don't have their best practices and so on as well. I think you've got to go all in and say, right, we're going to ignore this stuff over here. These things are things that work for us really, really well. It's the way that we want to operate as a business. And we just go all in on training our people to be the best in these particular areas. And if we don't use a Hinterview, if we don't use an Odro, if we don't use this thing over there, Sourcewell, blah, 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 it's okay.
Yeah, so part of our advisory work, Charlotte goes into businesses around the UK. And the first thing she does is she does an audit. And nobody uses anything. Like it's like some people use bits of it and other bit like recruiters are desperate for doing it. And recruitment founders, like they're not across the usage levels. So they don't know what is actually working. They're not data driven enough to be able to pull out the results to be able to go, oh, this piece of tech worked. It was good. Let's double down on this. They just get used to spending. And it just becomes part of the pitch.
And again, I think for us, those little things are actually, we've been relatively good at. So we use one of the video platforms. I can't remember if it's Hinterview or Odro or what. It just didn't work. We couldn't get the people to buy into it. So we didn't hang around with it for the next 2 years and try to. It was cool. Let's just can it now, get rid of it. And like, even if we take the financial hit because we'd signed a contract or whatever it was, we're not going to try and confuse our people's worlds by trying to force it if we can't get the buy-in and the right things as well. Whereas other platforms like a Zoom Info, quickly we've taken to, we've seen the benefits of it. Let's double down on it. Let's go and invest more into it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for us recently, Sourcewell, Dripify, and then our podcast are like the key bits. And then building community off the back of it and getting people in. But outside of that, and our ATS is Luxo, I don't know if you need a tremendous amount more if you have the data side right.
Yeah, I don't think you do. Like I said, my focus is more on the external, where the kind of yardstick that I want at the moment for us is, we, for one of our products, when we're sending over resumes to them, how are we sending that over? I want that to be a client to receive it, look at it and say, do you know what? That is the best thing I've ever seen. I want the candidates, when they're receiving offers, to say, do you know what? That is the best. Forget the actual offer, whether I'm happy with it, unhappy, whatever. I haven't seen anyone like this from anywhere else in the way that that's been delivered to me. So every, I've heard people talk about things like candidate experience and user journeys and touch points. But the touch points that they're discussing, all the same things. The mail shots that go to them for job alerts, the mail shots that go to clients, they're not the true touch points for me. So it's how, what are we going to implement now going forwards? And we're close to finalizing this now. But what are we going to implement with our clients where they look at that and say, fucking hell, that's the best brief that I've ever, or brief summary that I've ever received. I haven't seen anything like this from the look and feel as well as the content.
It's really interesting. You just got my head spinning on things that we probably have to improve on. I would have done a little bit on candidate journey in terms of like knowing that we take people from LinkedIn to WhatsApp. We then have podcasts to share with them. We have guides to whatever location they're going to. And then, you know, we're doing the consultation calls along the way. And then we obviously have the information from the clients and all of that stuff to give them. But maybe not down to the finer details of how they receive an email offer, or what other type of stuff do you like?
I'll tell you what, I experienced this before, but it was reminded to me recently. I was in Turkey in April, first family holiday in about 4 years.
Yeah.
So we're in Turkey, and I haven't experienced this here, and I definitely haven't experienced it when I'm in the hotels in the US. But one of the things that I have experienced the two or three times I've been in Turkey is you can call reception, all good. But if you need anything, right from when you've booked your room, even if you're not physically staying there yet, until you leave, WhatsApp us. And you get an immediate response.
Yeah.
And it's just those little things that I'm sat there and I'm thinking, this is bloody good service from this hotel. All I've got to do, I need some milk for my baby, some more milk, brought up to the room, can't go out and disturb him because he'll wake up, it's a nightmare. Cool, I can WhatsApp them and they'll send up some milk in a timely fashion. So then I look at them and I think, what is it that I like about that? It's not WhatsApp. WhatsApp's been around for plenty of time. No, they haven't invented WhatsApp. What do I like about it from that? Is there a version of an application of that from a service level to be brought into our product?
Mm.
Can I do it for the contingent stuff? Yes, I can. No, I can't, depending on what it is. But how can I implement that type of thing where a client or a candidate is coming away saying, that's pretty good. Don't get that anywhere else.
Mm.
And so we've gone through the experience of mapping out the journey of the true touch points with candidates and clients along the way through a process. So we're starting off there. Then it's pre-process. Mm. What are the touch points with clients and candidates there? Then it's post-process. What are the touch points and so on there? How do we improve all of that outside of anything that I've heard, seen, experienced in our industry? And that's where then, quite typically, speaking to a lot of other scale businesses and big businesses in the sports and entertainment sectors, in the tech sectors in general, what do the retailers do? How are they doing it in their worlds? What do we do internally? The way we now deliver our offers internally, we change that up. We now are looking to roll that out on our products piece with the clients externally. But the piece in that is, how do I scale that so everyone knows their role to play in that internally within FB? So it's not hinged on me being able to do it every time and what's in my head. This person in the chain knows this, marketing knows what to do here, the recruiter knows what to do there, et cetera, et cetera. So we're just going through that process now. We haven't had anyone reject an offer from us since we put this process in place.
Really?
Yeah. Hand on heart.
I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned you do a lot of retained work, and I know lots of people are doing retained work. When you do it USA, over the US, and you mix it up in London, and you're coming up against Shrek firms.
Yep.
I'm always blown away by how unimaginative Shrek firms are. And it's like the 1980s. Like it's crazy. Like, what do clients still want? Are they dying out, the people who want to deal with those people, or are they not? Like, what do they not want innovation in that world? Do like, can you give me a bit of insight what it's like competing against those companies?
Exactly what you said, unimaginative, right? So that's one of the things that we play on. Do they still want them? There's a bit of comfort with the name of having those firms in there. 100% there is. Within certain areas, we see it sometimes in sports where over less necessarily the Shreks, but you see UCAs and stuff, they've been in the market for sort of 30 years, so they've built up a network. And in the sports world, sometimes that can be, we come up against that. But again, this is what I talk about. I'm where I want the business to go down the route of is that businesses are and clients are now coming to us based on the strength of our product, not based on the strength of Samir's great at selling this, or our opposition's great at selling that, or the relationship, et cetera, et cetera. The product is what makes sense for the client to say, well, actually, it's hard for me to turn that down because from those Shrek firms, typically, and there's a few more out there, but from them, they haven't changed, they haven't innovated, they haven't needed to. The size that they're at, they don't feel the scope of need to. And they're like the Titanic, right? They've struggled to actually turn in any direction. So we've been able to come out with that straight away to say, well, look, this is what typically these guys do. I remember as early as 2017, Grant had joined us very early on. He was less than 6 months into his career with us, didn't have any prior experience at our level, was doing much more high volume stuff. And he placed the second most senior person at Wilko's. And all he did was followed the process and the training that had been given to him. It's not like he was well versed, well networked, or anything like that, right? And he sold against those guys and he completed that assignment from brief to placement 6 weeks. I think those guys were quoted months and months from the typical firms. We managed to do that in 6 weeks because of our processes and what we've put in place as well. So even that, I then look at and say, can we get that down to five? Can we get that down to four in terms of what our internal processes look like?
You think society's changing as well? Like, do you remember when we, like, I'm just a few years older than you, so when we were at uni and graduating, then it, like, I don't know if you went to any of these grad days or anything, but everybody had a posh accent, and I had a couple of weird experiences with it, and my assumption that business was just full of like posh people in a boardroom in London. Like, is that like, do you think the society's changed a bit more? That is there
Yeah,
more?
hugely. I think back to the start of my career. Started off in the insurance industry. Young face, 22-year-old, got a young face as it is, and so I probably had a chip on my shoulder of, are these guys going to take me seriously? Insurance sector, especially back then, had a certain type of reputation. Where deals are getting done, who's around that table? What do even the people around that table? What do they look like? It's very, I mean. D&I, it wasn't a thing then at all, right? And it, very similar profile. So I did have a chip on my shoulder on that. And so for me, I had to look the part. I had to be able to speak the part. And probably at the beginning, for the first 12 months, there was no element of personality from me because I was so engrossed with if I don't come across credible in terms of my knowledge and understanding, they're going to laugh me out the room. Whereas now, where I look at our clients, we engage with them on Instagram. We're following them and actually engaging with them on those types of platforms. I'm sat with you in a t-shirt now, unheard of back in the day, full suit, tie, et cetera, et cetera. Even going to see clients now, and I still get a bit weirded out by this because when we started off being full suits as a business, then we transitioned to you can be in dress down, smart casual, be in dress down, but you've got to have your suit in the office to go and visit clients. And that was a mandatory thing, or you had to have for females just business attire. And that was a mandatory thing. We used to have coat hangers and all sorts in the offices, so everyone had to have it. And if you didn't have it, where the hell's your stuff? What if I call you on a meeting today? You're not going to be ready, et cetera, et cetera. That has all been massively relaxed. I still feel a little bit weirded out when I go to see a client and I'm not in a suit. I might be in a shirt and a jacket, but open collar, I still feel a little bit, is this the right thing to do? But if I'm going to see a retailer or a fashion business, I'd be out of place. And so that's where
Yeah, you
I
have to
think
mirror your clients for sure.
yeah, and I think the makeup of those founders and the people that we interact with, again, 10 years ago, you're not going to find those senior execs on an Instagram or on social media to try and transact with them in that way, or interact with them in that way, I should say.
Yes. Now we remember being in Robert Walters in Perth. The sun was shining outside, and we're in a mining town. We're all like in these suits.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, we had to go out to client meetings in suits, and it was just none of it made sense. You know, it was like, we're not banking. Like, what are you talking about? So we're just to wrap up, Raheel, at 80, right? Nobody gets to 80. Like, this is unbelievable. This is like dreams come true. Like, it's worked out. Like, you could sell a percentage tomorrow and it's a great thing. So what is the plan? Like, when are you going to ride off into the sunshine like Tom Glanfield?
There is no desire to be completely honest. We've got a plan. We've got an event plan. Don't get me wrong. There's no exit plan for Scott and I. And yeah. I can't, there's too much for us to do. I appreciate that 80 is a decent size. But honestly, I don't look at that and think the job is done, we're set, we're anything. I, at 100, 150, I don't look at 150 people and think, fuck hell yeah.
That's insane. That's like a small village, you know? Like, that's a...
I haven't thought about it in that terms, but I don't look at that and think...
Yeah.
If you had
them all on the one factory floor, I bet you'd be like, oh my God, that's a lot of people.
It would be. But then my first thought is the factory big enough? And that is just a good illustration of how the both of us think. We said this half in jest, but also pretty seriously. We sat in a room with Tom, and I utterly, utterly respect the guy and for what he's achieved and everything that he's gone through on the journey and so on as well. But said this to him that we're in our eighth year. So where we are in our eighth versus where LH was in their eighth, or the end of their 7 years versus some of the others, your OJs and plenty of the others, we're ahead of the curve from a financial perspective. We've looked at all their accounts. We've mapped it out. We are competitive like that. We are immature like that, if that's what you want to call it. Don't give a damn.
I mean, it's not
but we are. We're ahead of those businesses for where they were in their seventh year. And Tom then bit back and gave some shit and said, yeah, well, there's two of you, so you should expect to be. Cool. Makes sense. If this business has got to be a legacy business, we've got an event where we want to take the business public.
Yeah.
But that isn't that's the end game. Because for me, I've got a business bucket list of, cool, I think I'm good enough to work with Scott and take this business public and help the team and the team help me around us. But are we good enough to run a public business in all of the red tape, the bureaucracy and the crap that we keep getting told comes along with that? Maybe we're not, but I think we are.
Yeah.
You know, are we good enough to grow the sharehold price and the value for the shareholders when we're in that environment? Are we good enough to then take it to the next level? Are we good enough to acquire multiple businesses? So we're on the acquisition stage right now and we've got offers out and so on and so forth. Then I wonder, are we good enough to acquire two and integrate two businesses at a time, three businesses at a time? Could I go and set up Dubai and LA at the same time? Conventional wisdom says, don't fucking do that. You'd be stupid. Get one done, then move to the next. In fact, conventional wisdom, Scott says that. We were talking about it the other day. And in the back of my head, as he's talking to me, he's like, yeah, makes sense. But could we do both? Could we pull it off?
What you could do, you could do Dubai, but get them work in the European market from Dubai, and you would just get the best talent in the UK to go out and live there. So you work a better desk, better rates than the competitors, and then you'd attract the people out there.
And so I know we can do it in that sense. But again, can we grow it to the level that we want, in the speed that we want, achieve those things that we want where we've got boots on ground? I know a lot of people doing the US market from the UK, which is fine and all good. My perspective on that is I don't feel that you're going all in. Yeah. I know there are cost savings. I know you'll make a lot more profit in the short term and so on as well, because you haven't got the cost. So especially somewhere like in New York, which is where we are, and we're in Manhattan. But I didn't feel that we could go all in on global growth and signified to the market and the rest of it, when we want to take the business public, that we're serious about this if we weren't out there. And so I always think that there's going to be something holding you back from achieving truly what you could achieve if you're not in that environment. So it'll be the same thing with the West Coast. It'll be the same thing with the Dubai if the research supports Dubai. And then I asked myself, what after that? Is it in Australia? Is it a Europe? Is it a what's the South American market like? Don't know at this point. So I'm asking the question, what's the African market like? Don't know. But it's, I can, as much as it is in our control, I can bet we'll be out there.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Appreciate your time.